Welcome to the Global Discussion, discussions with creatives, leaders, and thinkers. My name is Simon Hodgkins, and today I'm joined by Olivia Plotnick. Olivia, you're very welcome to the show. Let's begin by asking you to introduce yourself and tell our worldwide audience a little bit about the world of Olivia Plotnick.
Hi, Simon. It's great to be here. As you mentioned, my name is Olivia, and I'm originally from the US. I moved to China in 2015 when I was 24 years old. I didn't know anybody, didn't really know much about what I was doing. And I started working in marketing and communications. And that's where I've focused much of my career since then. So I was working in agencies. And in 2019, I was working at Ogilvy. And I had the, crazy idea to go off and start my own marketing agency. And so mid-2019, I founded my own agency based out of Shanghai and started building up a team. And we do social media marketing for brands for the China market. So we do anything from strategy to full account management. And this is particularly interesting. You know, I mentioned that I moved to Shanghai in 2015. And that was kind of right at the time when a lot of social media and e-commerce platforms were really starting to take off in China, and a lot of the trends that are really entrenched in Chinese consumer behavior today were just beginning at the time. So it was an incredibly exciting time to get into the market. And my career has kind of spanned the development of China social media and China e-commerce, which, for those of you who don't know, within China, sites like Instagram, Facebook, Google are all blocked. And so China has its own set of basically its own entire digital ecosystem, which is quite far advanced, more than a lot of the platforms that we use today in the West. And so if you think about Facebook and Instagram, those are now starting to integrate shopping features. This was well integrated into Chinese social apps long before it has been today. So this was starting in around 2015, 2016, really taking off in China. And it only started to take off very recently in the West. So that's a little bit about my background. I've done projects for nonprofit organizations in China and community building out there. And I currently am sitting here talking to you from Nairobi in Kenya. A bit of a curveball there, but I'm here checking out the market, meeting people, trying to understand, you know, what's going on here. It's a very exciting time, I think, in Africa, especially there's a lot of ties and comparisons that can be made to China and Africa. So yeah, that's a little bit about myself and where I'm at currently.
Fascinating and exciting. I can't wait to dive into this conversation a little bit, because obviously, as you say, you're joining us from Nairobi. You know, it's great to see that you're checking out what's happening there on the continent. And also, you referenced the marketing activities early on with Ogilvy. And for anybody in the world of marketing or global business, they would have heard of Ogilvy. I mean, it's one of the very well-renowned global brands that are in that space. Did you always want to get into that line of work? And how did you end up going out to Shanghai? What was the draw for Shanghai? Was it just an opportunity, or how did that happen?
I started studying Chinese in high school, actually. My high school was one of the first schools in the nation to offer a Chinese program, and we had the opportunity to go to China. So my first trip to China was in 2007, which 2007 looked very different from what it looked like in 2012 when I went back during college. And the time in 2007, you could already feel the energy there. You know, so much was happening. And for me, it was completely different than anything else I had experienced in my life. So I continued to study Chinese, and I kind of got it in my head, you know, as a 16, 17 year old that, you know, I wanted to do business in China. Obviously, at that time, I had no idea what that meant. And through, you know, a series of events, that's kind of what I do today, you know, 15 years later. But yeah, so I started studying Chinese, went to China in college, studied there, and then came back to the US, worked for a couple of years, and then moved back to China to find a job and essentially figure things out. I don't know if I ever figured anything out, but it was quite a journey. And, you know, I've always been a fan of putting yourself outside of your comfort zone. That's when you learn the most. That's when you create the most opportunity for yourself and for those around you.
I love it. And my question to follow on then is, was it a big decision to leave Ogilvy and to set up your own company? Because, I mean, it sounds huge. You know, you studied the language, you moved to the country, you're working for a very well-respected organization, and then all of a sudden you said, you know what, I'm going to do this myself. What was that? What drove you to that? Was it just a desire to own your own agency, or was it just the opportunity was so huge? Was it this different ecosystem that you referred to earlier?
You know, landing a job at Ogilvy, I think in my head was, okay, I've landed the dream job that anybody in marketing would have, you know, would kill for, to work for Ogilvy in China. But the reality was I wasn't loving it. I wasn't inspired. And I think China is a place that moved at that time. It was moving so fast. So many things could happen so quickly, and you could really move at breakneck speed. And I think I felt in a large organization a bit held back by that speed. And so I thought, you know what? I could go out on my own and move as fast as I want, for better or for worse. And so I did it. And, you know, luckily enough, in Shanghai at the time, I was part of several communities, and it's an amazing city to be in because you have access to so many people from different industries and different levels of their career. And so, you know, I had met with and become friends with and had mentors of people who had started their own business and figured it out and made it. And so it didn't seem like such a crazy concept to me at the time.
And tell me a little bit, if you don't mind, about the International Professional Women's Society, because that's been going a long time in Shanghai, in China.
So I did serve as the president. Yeah. So they're entering their 30th year. It's an incredible nonprofit organization focused around supporting professional women. And so when I moved to Shanghai first, you know, I didn't know anybody. I was going to tons of different networking events every single day of the week. And they were holding a lot of different events around, you know, various topics about helping you with your career or entrepreneurs in China. And I met so many incredible women and men through that community. And I had the opportunity to serve on the board of directors, served as president for a while. And so we organized monthly events, and then we organized the Women Leadership Awards every year. So those are the longest running awards for international women in China. And that was an incredible opportunity to meet so many people, to get leadership experience, and to really dive into, you know, how people are pushing change within organizations and on their own in different communities.
Yeah, thank you, Olivia. Thanks for the insight into that. And I know the IPWS, as it also goes by, is very well regarded. And when it comes to your own business and your own agency, what is actually the, you know, when, if somebody was to stop you in the street and say, can you just explain what your agency actually does? Like, how do you work with brands, with customers? What do you, you know, what's the mainstay of this sort of approach that you're taking through your own organization? And tell us a bit about it.
Sure. Essentially, we help brands succeed in China through social media, which is incredibly paramount to reach your customers in China. And it's difficult for a lot of foreign brands because the Chinese digital ecosystem is so different. And so what we do is we kind of, first of all, break it down and make it understandable for our clients overseas. You know, what are the platforms that they should be on? Why should they be on their on those type of platforms? What different activities can they do on those platforms? And then we'll come up with strategy for them. So, okay, this is the type of messaging, you know, these are influencers that you should be working with. These are types of campaigns that you can run. And we do the day-to-day work of creating the content, posting on the platforms, interacting with followers and people on the platform. And then a lot of also what we spend our time on is analyzing the performance of that content and then adjusting the strategy based off of that. And we also create a ton of content around marketing in China, around consumer trends. So we put out a newsletter where we really just basically give away a lot of free advice on, you know, what Chinese brands are doing in China, which is really interesting, their marketing strategies, how they're reaching consumers, how they're going viral, you know, case studies of foreign brands who are doing cool things in China and different types of consumer trends. So we're constantly trying to kind of be that educational voice in the market.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And it's often that we see even some of the world's biggest international brands try to make an entry into China, try to make a success in the Chinese market. And, you know, a few years later, you see them having to retreat or rethink their strategy, or they've overlooked something. And do you think there's a big benefit to working with somebody then, obviously, who's on the ground, who's living and breathing that culture, that understands that different ecosystem? Because some of the biggest brands that, you know, invest heavily in China, you often see them getting it wrong, don't you?
Time and time and time again. And I don't think that will ever stop. You know, it's essential, I would say, to work with somebody on the ground. But even more than just having a team on the ground, which, you know, many of the brands that you have in your mind that have made huge mistakes, they do have a team on the ground. But where the problem is that they're not empowering that team and they're not trusting that team to make the right decision. So their team on the ground has probably told them or advised them or maybe wanted to advise them of some messaging, or, you know, maybe we shouldn't do this campaign. But headquarters, which sits in London or New York or somewhere, they're vetoing that decision because they think they know what's right for their brand, which, you know, on many levels is true. But China is such a vastly different market that you have to be able to trust whoever you're employing on the ground. So, you know, not only just having someone on the ground, but trusting their decision and empowering them to tell you when something is not going to work out.
And do you think that there are different nuances in the different sort of cities in China?
Oh, yes. China is...
Could you expand on that for our audience?
China is a massive, massive country, and it is incredibly different. So a very simple example is, you know, somebody in Shanghai speaks Shanghainese, and somebody in a city, you know, 100 kilometers away speaks a different dialect, and they probably can't understand most of what each other says. And that's just a dialect. You know, there's different customs and different, you know, behaviors, different foods that they like. So the country as a whole is so different. China, you know, it's a massive country, and we often forget that. We kind of lump it in as one homogenous place, but it's very, very, very different. And again, that's another place where a lot of brands, you know, make mistakes because they're just thinking about it as one entire place, and not made up of many different subcultures.
No, 100%. I couldn't agree more. And just coming back to the conversation about the apps and the ecosystem and the difference in social media, because China, I think, when I think of the super app that a lot of European countries and even American large companies are still trying to create, some of these super apps, if I can use that sort of term, they already exist in China. It's very common that people do an awful lot more with a particular app than we do, say, in Europe or the US, where the apps are kind of quite fragmented. There isn't one app to rule them all. What do you see as the main differences there? Because the apps and this sort of use case, is it unique to China, or is it just more advanced in China? Or how would you best describe that?
Yeah, it is very unique to China. If you think about WeChat, for example, which is probably the one that most people have heard of, within WeChat, you can do messaging, you can buy train tickets, you can buy flight tickets, you can top up your mobile phone, you can have a, you know, social media feed as you do kind of in Facebook. You can send money to friends, you can do numerous different things. So that is what we kind of talk about when we're thinking of super app. And, you know, in the West, a lot of apps try to just solve a single issue, a single problem. And we're very used to that. Whereas in China, you don't just have, you know, one app. There are multiple different super apps, but within those apps, you have tons of different functionalities.
And what about the content then, just to wrap this part of our discussion up? The content that you share on those apps, it's a little bit different to, you know, people might be familiar with on Twitter, a tweet or X, you know, as it's now called, or putting a post on LinkedIn. But as a brand, you've got to get that content right if you want to actually engage in this very diverse, technically advanced environment, don't you?
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is something universal to marketing as a whole. There are different channels in every different market. This is not a particular thing for China. So as a brand, you always need to understand, why is my audience on this channel, and what can I do with the content that I'm going to post, and where can I lead them? Now, in China, it just so happens that there are so many different ways that you can lead an audience through the content that you post. So for example, you know, we have WeChat, again, I mentioned, is probably one of the most common apps that people outside of China will have heard of. And so that is a lot more bottom of the funnel type of content, but you can still lead somebody to purchase through an e-commerce mini program, or you can still lead them to watch a video, or, you know, follow your account for more information. And so each different platform has a different purpose. It's just about understanding the nuances of what journey can I take this user through within this app, and through this content, and, you know, why are they there in the first place? And I think with China, a lot of the apps, a lot of the social media apps and e-commerce apps are very much about entertainment and very much about, you know, show me something that's going to interest me. Whereas in the West, I think we have an idea of what we're looking for first, something specific in mind, and then we're going to be led down that path. And so it's kind of adjusting your mindset for China with that content of what you want to do with it.
That's great insight. Thank you for sharing that, Olivia. And I suppose when it comes to advice, you must have learned an awful lot along the way. And I'm sure you pick up advice and also share a lot of advice, of course. But if somebody was looking to enter a new market or to make success, maybe in a market they weren't that familiar with, have you got any advice or tips or anything you've picked up along the way that you think would be useful to share with our audience?
Experience it for yourself. I see a lot of companies wanting to enter China. And one of the most common things that a lot of people in my industry who work in China, we always joke about the fact that we hear, you know, oh, if we only get 1% of the China market, we'll be very successful. And, you know, that's said by someone who has clearly never been to China before. because, you know, it's not as easy as just getting 1% of the market. You know, it's a very complex, very diverse market, as we've been discussing. And so going to China or going to any type of market that you're trying to understand and being on the ground, meeting people, asking questions, riding public transportation and watching what people are doing with their phones. How are they shopping? You know, asking questions, where do you order from? How long does it take to get your product? What products do you wish you had? What are the biggest challenges you face? So really having that curiosity and the willingness to go to that place and be on the ground.
Yeah, sounds critical. And tell me, is that what brings you to Nairobi? Like, we're talking today from the African continent. What's happening in Nairobi? Why are you in Nairobi today?
Yes. So bit of a curveball. I'm in Nairobi, you know, for that very exact reason. I think I've always wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone. You know, I moved to China by myself, didn't know exactly what I was going to do or what was going to happen. And I created so many incredible opportunities from that. And so, you know, I always try to find an opportunity to push myself outside of my comfort zone, and coming to Nairobi was definitely that. And I also have seen a lot of similarities between the development of the market here in Kenya and what China was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You have a lot of people coming online through mobile phones now, which is very similar to what happened in China about a decade ago. And so seeing how that develops and seeing what skills that I have learned from China can possibly be applied to this market. And, you know, like I said before, just asking people, what are they doing here? What are their biggest challenges? What are they, you know, shopping for? How are they communicating with each other? How are they building communities? Things like that. So that's been very, very interesting. And a lot of ideas floating around, a lot of inspiration. There's incredible things happening here in Nairobi.
It sounds really exciting. And it brings me on to the last few things I want to ask you about. And one is that over the next 6 to 12 months, what are you planning for? What's on your horizon? Are you a meticulous planner? Are you taking each day as it comes? What does the roadmap look like for you and your business as you look forward?
I was having lunch with a friend today and we were kind of talking about, you know, 5-10 year plans. And she said something to me that really resonated. She had heard it on a podcast, and it was basically something to the effect of, you know, you don't need to know exactly where you're going, but you need to continue to be curious and continue to pursue things that pique your curiosity. So all that to say, I couldn't tell you exactly, you know, this is in 6 months, I'm going to be here and doing this. And in 12 months, by that time, you know, I'm following my gut. I'm following what intrigues me and what interests me. And going from there, you know, I think I have a lot of ideas, and there's certainly a lot of people who I work with who have amazing ideas as well. And we have projects in the works. And it's an interesting time to, you know, be learning and be curious and be exploring new markets, I think, as the world evolves so rapidly with AI. And, you know, you have markets in Asia growing expansively, you have markets in Africa growing expansively. So staying curious about those and seeing what opportunities arise.
And does, you've mentioned AI, of course, and I don't want to go down the AI rabbit hole, but has it
fundamentally... I'm definitely no expert.
Well, has it fundamentally impacted your business? I'm assuming the AI in China, like as well, has its own ecosystem. There's lots of discussions between the US and China around AI and technology and chipsets and everything in between. But I'm just interested in your view as somebody that's on the ground in Shanghai, working with, you know, major brands, working with people across the Chinese market in different cities with all the diversity that we've spoken about. What is the impact of AI like from, you know, somebody that's living and breathing the Chinese market?
You know, I think you have a lot of, especially the big e-commerce players like Alibaba and Tencent are starting to put out products. And I think what has made me the most curious are products that they're putting out for merchants to be able to personalize recommendations more, to be able to do better planning, things like this. So that's certainly a very interesting area to keep an eye on. I think just in the industry of marketing itself, it has been incredibly eye-opening and, you know, kind of made me sit back and think about what is the value I actually provide, you know, as a marketer in this field, and how is that value going to change over the next few years? And so, again, I think exploring different possibilities and really thinking about, you know, what is the most impactful thing that I can provide to my customers.
That makes a lot of sense. And finally, is there anything that you'd like to leave us as maybe some last thoughts to help us think on what the things that we've been talking about today, or maybe anything else that you'd like to share with our worldwide audience? And secondly, and importantly, if people want to reach out and connect, maybe use the services of your organization, or just find out more about the things that you're involved in, where would you like to point people to?
Sure. So I think, you know, one last thought. We've talked about a lot of different topics today, from going to China, being in Nairobi, marketing. One thing that has really been a central theme, I think, throughout both personal and career is just having people in your life that inspire you. And it's kind of the same concept of hiring people who are smarter than you, or hiring people who are good at what you are bad at, having people in your close circle who are good at things that maybe you are not, to continuously push you out of your comfort zone, to continuously kind of show you, okay, this is how you can do it. This is what you can do. So that's a really important kind of takeaway that I continuously remind myself and those around me that that's one of the most important things that you can do. If you want to connect with me, the easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. Just type in my full name, which I'm sure you can find in the show notes, and we'll connect. Send me a message. I'll send you a link to our newsletter that we send out bi-weekly so you can stay up with the latest China marketing and social media trends.
Well, that's wonderful. And it brings us nicely to the end of our episode today here on the Global Discussion. I want to thank everybody who's been watching or listening to this episode of the show from around the world, whether that's in Shanghai or Nairobi or anywhere else. We certainly do appreciate it. Make sure that you follow us, you like us, you subscribe to what we're doing here to help support the podcast. And of course, check out all the great work that Olivia Plotnick is doing. And all that remains is for me to say that I hope you'll join me back here for some more discussions with creatives and leaders and thinkers just like Olivia. Thank you, Olivia. It's been wonderful to talk to you again today.
Thank you so much, Simon.